Thursday, April 4th. These were 2 days I would have loved to sleep to a luxurious 9 or 10 o'clock. Instead, I woke again early, along about 7, and pondered the joys of going to the beach for a swim. I was actually too tired to do it, and so drifted back to sleep. It was nearly 9, and I woke up for good and had breakfast in bed, and then dressed with Liz coming in every minute or two, with another 2 or 3 or 4 pictures of me to sign for the staff, which I was very glad to do. Uh-huh. I hope I never forget that after all the years Linda knew and worked with FDR, we only have about 2 or 3 autographed pictures of him, and how much we treasure them. I wanted to be ready to leave on time for my own sake, and because I think it's the manner of this efficiently run household to do things on time. So just a few minutes before 11, I went out on the terrace, and all the staff assembled over by the fountain. She took me over and introduced me to them. Many of them had been with her for years, and there are extensive houses on the grounds. There were cameramen, and pictures were made of me and the staff and me and Mrs. Post by the fountain feeding the goldfish, out on the lawn with that great pleasure dome of a house as a background. Just at the last, as I was about to go, she introduced another employee, the security man, a big, burly, commanding-looking fellow. Later, Liz said something like, "He has as much security as you have at the White House." And of course, it shouldn't have come as a surprise to me. We said goodbye to Mrs. Post on the steps, and Angie and Robin in the Hartzog, and Mr. Dudley and Mr. McManus and I returned to Washington on the Meriwether, having lunch on the way. Elegantly served, as always. One of the pleasures of this trip has been the chance of a long conversation with Robin, one of my always favorite people. Uh-oh. I asked her if she had seen Mrs. Kennedy and how was she, because many of their circles touch. In that inimitable manner of hers, she said, "I don't know. You know, she doesn't talk to women much." And there was nothing censuring in her manner or snide. I shouldn't mind being in Robin's hands for discussion. And yet it was an expressive statement. I was back at the White House at 3. The headlines of the Washington papers were so hopeful. Hanoi offers talks on bombing halt. U.S. accepts, will establish contact. Johnson off today for a Hawaii parley on Vietnam policy. It would be good, really, from my standpoint, that he would be gone on this trip while I would be gone to Texas. I wouldn't feel so remiss in leaving him in Washington. And another headline, RFK HHH CLBJ. But the amazing news was that Lyndon had flown up just a few hours ago to New York, the installation of Archbishop Terence Cook, taking with him not only Lucy, which is natural, for her strong Catholicism and the comfort she brings him, but also Lynn. This was the end. There was even talk around the house that Lucy was going with him to Honolulu, and Lynn. I immediately began to plant seeds around that I thought it would be fine for Lucy and Pat to go if he wanted them to, but not Lynn, and began arrangements for little Patrick to be taken care of here in the White House. And then I worked at my desk and with Ashton, Bess on the Austrian dinner list, marking house guests that I would like to have, and putting a memo in Ashton's hands to get approved by Lyndon, and then call the prospective guests. Because, of course, we'll return Tuesday night, and then the dinner will be Wednesday night. And then worked with Liz on the Texas trip. Seldom has there been a trip I looked forward more to. Spring is beautiful. I have a passion for showing foreigners our country, not its major metropolitan areas like New York and Washington, which is mostly what they see, but its countryside and little towns and out-of-the-way gems, and this was just what I was going to do, and showing them our home. The speeches were in good order. I went over them. I was even satisfied with my clothes. One of the few flaws in the day was that it seemed Lyndon was going at an even faster pace than before he made his decision Sunday night. Marie said he'd gotten hardly any rest and was very tired. And here he was leaving for Hawaii tonight. And there was a Democratic fundraising dinner this evening, and I got the word that we were going to it, not for the dinner part, but just for a 9 o'clock appearance, and he would make a speech. Nevertheless, it meant evening dress and up hairdo. So I had called Mr. Pear. Sometime in the hour or two before, I'd seen Lucy and told her how I felt about little Patrick's making the trip to Hawaii. That child will give and give for her father's comfort. And actually, I think, too, a little bit, she wanted the excitement of a trip like that for herself and Patrick. She has really not been on the trips, any of them, except a 1 or 2 day trip to Mexico City. And Linda has been around the world, to Europe 2 or 3 times. But no, it would be all 3 of them, Linda, Patrick, and baby, or none. And then, just about that time, Lyndon sent us word that he'd been thinking it over, and he thought it would be too hard on the baby. So that one was settled. And I told Lucy that if we lived and had any means left, I was going to see that she and Patrick had some wonderful trips in a quieter time. It was sometime while Mr. Pear was fixing my hair, and Lindbergh had been listening to the TV. She came flying into my room. "Mama, Mama, Dr. King's been shot." And then, quieting down a little, she told us that Dr. King, about to lead a march in Memphis tomorrow, had been shot on a balcony and was on his way to the hospital. And from that moment on, the evening assumed a nightmare quality. It was only a few minutes later that she came in and said, "Mama, he's dead." And everybody's mind began racing off in its own direction as to what this would mean to racial violence in our country, for the work of so many to try to bring us together. How far would it throw us back? There I was with an elaborate hairdo in Mr. Stravopoulos's elegant, festive, flame-colored chiffon, ready for the Democratic dinner, which was already in progress. But the hands of the clock had stopped, and we were in a strange sort of suspended state for the next hour or two, Linda and Lucy and I. Lyndon was in his office. I knew a statement was being prepared. He gave it on TV from the White House. "America is shocked and saddened by the brutal slaying tonight of Dr. Martin Luther King. I ask every citizen to reject the blind violence that has struck Dr. King, who lived by nonviolence. I pray that his family can find comfort in the memory of all he tried to do for the land he loved so well. I've just conveyed the sympathy of Mrs. Johnson and myself to his widow, Mrs. King." The line I particularly liked: "I hope all Americans tonight will search their hearts as they ponder this most tragic incident." And in the line that settled our personal immediate questions: "I have canceled my plans for the evening. I am postponing my trip to Hawaii until tomorrow." So I took off my flame-colored chiffon dress and put on a comfortable hostess gown. And it was sometime after 10 when Lyndon came in. Clark. With Clark and Marnie Clifford and Marie, Arthur and Matilda Krim and John Criswell. The last 3 had just come from the Democratic dinner, I believe. And Mary Rather, how fitting that she should be with us. On so much of the ending, she was with us close to the beginning, and so many of the moments of high crisis. And Lucy and Pat. It was a strange, mostly quiet meal. I thought, and maybe they did too, that we had been pummeled by such an avalanche of emotions the last 4 days that we couldn't feel any more. And here we were, suddenly poised on the edge of another abyss, the bottom of which we could in no way see. If we were silent, the TV was not. It blared constantly. Statements from everybody, speculations on what would happen in various cities, fearful beating up of tensions. I do not remember when the first word came of crowds gathering here in Washington on certain streets. I do remember I talked to Clark Clifford about whether I should continue my own trip tomorrow morning. Clark, the always cautious, said, "Let's wait until in the morning and see what the situation is and decide then." Liz was calling to ask me. She was being queried. The guests left around 11:30. Sometime, I do not quite remember when, I asked Lyndon about his meeting with Kennedy this morning. He said Sorensen had accompanied him and that they wanted Lyndon to support them. He said he felt very fond of the vice president. He wanted to maintain a position of unifying the country, but he felt perfectly free to express his feelings in any way he saw fit. Lyndon said he had never seen such arrogance, but he must say that Sorensen was decent. They wanted him to get busy with a committee for liberals and start drafting people. I talked to Lyndon about what I should do myself tomorrow. He said he thought I ought to go on, by all means. And so, almost sure that I would, I went to bed.